Yeah, do we have a new member on the call here?
Yes, caller. Hi. I was listening to the show today, and I needed to ask some questions.
What can you tell us about room 237?
I can't tell. I don't know. I don't know. For a while, I thought we had collectively all gone into room 237.
Yeah. No more?
There ain't nothing in room 237. Not a goddamn thing.
Did you guys pull books off your shelf?
We can do that now. Alan did.
I don't have any books or shelves.
Am I supposed to close my eyes before I pick the book?
I thought that's what he said.
Bill's actually not here today, so, you know, we can't ask him what his rules are, but I say just go for it.
Well, I ended up pulling up, I did it. I put my hand into the bookshelf and I wound up grabbing Memories, Dreams, and Reflections by Jung. And I think he wanted the first paragraph.
On 237, yeah.
237. So I'll give you my paragraph and participate. Reforms by retrogression, on the other hand, are as a rule less expensive and in addition more lasting, for they return to the simpler, tried and tested ways of the past and make the sparest use of newspapers, radio, television, and all supposedly time-saving innovations. It doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay.
Who's next?
I got Spittle Tabooed in the Golden Bough. Golden Bough, page 237. The destruction of the hair and nails plainly involves an inconsistency of thought. The object of the destruction is avowedly to prevent these severed portions of the body from being used by sorcerers. But the possibility of their being so used depends upon the supposed sympathetic connection between them and the man from whom they were severed. And it is this sympathetic connection, and if this sympathetic connection still exists, clearly these severed portions cannot be destroyed without injury to the man.
Oh, that's nice. That's Ripley's being cloned out of the hair again.
Totally. We just talked about being cloned from the...
And, of course, that's Gattaca.
Right.
Right. And, wow, this is sort of abstract, but I had done a post. I don't want to... Someone could look it up if someone was so interested. All the happy creatures at blogspot.com. I don't know. I want to say like December 2010. I did a post connecting time bandits and Superman. Whatever the one where Superman gets cloned, the hair of Superman gets cloned.
Is that 4?
I think it's 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 4. Superman 4, his hair gets cloned. The same thing, but I connected it with like all this stuff that we've been talking about today. So if someone really was interested in finding it, I think it's December 2010. Regardless, I think that's interesting. Doug, can you read the last like 2 sentences of the thing you read again?
Sure. Actually, it's all one sentence.
Oh.
See, it's weird because there's no context because I just opened it. I don't have any context of what it.
But the whole point was no context, right?
Okay, but so this is from a chapter called The Tower.
Okay.
I like that. And it's part 8, The Tower. But he's talking. So he says reforms by retrogressions, on the other hand, are as a rule less expensive and in addition more lasting, for they return to the simpler tried and tested ways of the past and make the sparest use of newspapers, radio, television, and all supposedly time-saving innovations.
Okay. I get it now. It's saying about reforming instead of creating anew. So you alter what's already there instead of making something new. This could, again, be folding the tree into itself. But I like that he's talking about the use of, from whatever power structure he's referring to, the use of media by some sort of power structure, is he not? This is what it sounds like to me.
I have not read this, so I honestly do not know.
But I mean, I don't mean, and it doesn't matter if he's talking about a government or a psychoanalyst, whatever he's saying, he's not using media to reform.
Right. There's the issue of reform where it's you're dealing with, you create a cosmetic change, but you don't have, you're basically just doing the same, repeating the same thing over and over again. Like you have your Babel laundry, you know, just keeps on recycling, or you can actually have a fundamental change in the thing itself, which is generally very rare. Whereas reformation is, I mean, as common as anything.
Well, reformation, that's your Dr. Roberts. That's a great Beatles tune, by the way. But that's Dr. Roberts' Beautiful Models. He is the Beverly Hills plastic surgeon in the movie. We were just on the movie Looker. He's the plastic surgeon. It's the cosmetic changes.
Wait a minute. It's the same. I'm sorry.
We're talking about making cosmetic changes. It's like putting lipstick on a pig.
Yeah.
The movie Looker is about a cosmetic surgeon.
Uh-huh. Totally. Oh, I thought you were saying it was the same person. I was like, I thought there was another level to it.
Oh, I just said that his name is Dr. Larry Roberts. But, you know, I was saying, you know, the Beatles song, Dr. Robert?
Dr. Roberts. Yeah. Dr. Robert.
And isn't, oh, and actually in, since you've been on your Fear and Loathing kick, in the Bill Murray Where the Buffalo Roam, which is also it's Bill Murray as Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah.
When he's in the hospital, they go, Dr. Robert, paging Dr. Robert.
Right.
Which I feel sure was a reference to that song.
Yeah, totally. It must have been. That's funny. Huh.
So was Doug's quote saying that everything is a remix? See it that way.
Doug, since you don't have the context of our conversation, what does it mean to you, if anything?
It's a hard little nut that I can't crack.
Oh.
Bust that nut, Doug.
I thought it was the explorers.
Okay, so to me, one of the things that I've been thinking about fairly deeply is the idea of, okay, so my question always is, how should one live? And so it seems like this is the perpetual question. And what happens in civilization is little tiny reforms, but oftentimes you look back retroactively and think that it was better back then. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if this speaks to that or not, but often what often happens is you end up, you know, when were the good old days? And the good old days were the hunter-gatherer days, like 10,000 years ago. Those were the good old days.
I don't know. Those days kind of sucked too. Their own way.
Well, when we were tiny little monkeys, you know, there was lots of trees, and we were just kind of swinging around. Those were the good old days.
No, see, like, I think what you're trying to, how I'm interpreting it is, like, our only job, really, was going and finding nuts and stuff. And then we just relaxed. Is that what you're trying to say?
I mean, you gotta figure, you were starving, and you were at the, you know, you didn't have a nice air-conditioned, you know, apartment. You were, like, sweating your balls off and worried about getting eaten by a jaguar or something. You know,
it's
like,
not like you're, I'm still worried about that.
Are you worried about getting eaten by a jaguar?
Kind of.
Yeah. Well, the pharaoh was probably like, you know, these are any king was like, these are the good old days, you know, like for him, you know, and then all everybody who's building up the kingdom and working their asses off, those people.
Yeah. You know? But I mean, you can only compare it to what you know right now. You know, relatively, I'm sure it wasn't bad. I mean, people seem to adapt.
Right. Well, not everything has ever been pizza and blowjobs, you know.
But, I mean, you've read Terrence McKenna, right?
Mm-hmm.
How he talks about, like, goddess worship and
archaic revival type stuff.
Yeah, that kind of thing. That's what I'm getting from it. But I don't know.
Hmm.
To me, that's there's the idea of the golden age of Saturn. Are you familiar with this concept? It was the idea that there was this the golden age of Saturn, and it's the idea that trying to restore that golden age is actually a very common mythological and esoteric concept.
Yeah.
So just to say that, you know, we have to be careful. So it's of course, the rethroning Saturn is like, you know, remembering Osiris, same type of concept. But, you know, as we were saying earlier, it's still another false crown. You know, you don't want to restore someone else to the throne. You want to take yourself to the crown.
Yeah, I think that this whole bathroom thing that was coming up is kind of interesting, like looking at the toilet like a false crown.
Yeah,
at the back,
the head.
And so, like, when Jim Carrey is holding the fucking penguin over the thing and says, "Open the pod bay doors," it's kind of like, I don't know, suggestive of like
putting shit in your head.
Yeah, shit in your head, which is like if you saw the South Park rendition of Mr. Popper's Penguins, where Kyle is like, everything is just shit, and he keeps seeing shit everywhere, like literally. And then he goes to the previews, and, like, it's Jim Carrey with a bunch of penguins, and it's just shit everywhere, and they just start shitting all over each other, and it's just, you know?
I'm with you. Those Celtic rebel guys, they were like, oh, you see, this is Hollywood's fecophilia. I'm like, fuck you. It's, like, actually a criticism of, like, if you do you disagree that everything is shit?
Mm-hmm.
We are in a world of shit.
Right. And so the world, I mean, it's interesting too, because Da'at is actually like referred to as the universe and intellect, as the universe as far as intellect is concerned. And so in the intellect, our relationship to everything, like this is another Freudian concept, is that money is shit, and that everything that we buy with money is by extension shit. And we're like children playing with our shit. And so, you know, I can totally look at it, you know, that the toilet is a really good representation of the Da'at, I think.
That's, yeah.
Didn't Elvis die on the toilet?
Yeah.
Jim
Morrison died in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Jim Morrison died in the bathtub?
Yeah, but that's the cover story.
Because then he's the lizard king dying in the bath, and Elvis was the king, dies in the bathroom.
No, Jim Morrison died in a toilet stall in the place. So there was a bar that he was seen at the night before, and the owner of the bar came out about, I think it was like 5 years ago or 4 years ago or something, and basically says he was interviewed saying, yeah, we took the body and we moved it back to the hotel. And he died of heroin overdose. And he didn't normally do heroin, but he did the heroin that night and fucking died in a bathroom. And then they put him into the bath.
So. Mm-hmm.
it's actually it's the first thing that's come out that's like the guy's like saying it. The guy's like has sold his business. He's like retired. He's just this older guy, and he's just like, whatever, this happened. You know, what do you want to do to me? You know, he's like, everybody was there. Like, the people who saw it all basically agreed with each other that we're not talking about this. I forget who all was there, but there were certain big wigs. Yeah. Anyways, whatever.
So the toilet's also the throne.
Yes.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
King of the castle. King of the castle.
So the king died on the throne.
That's right, yeah.
It's pretty.
But it is great. I mean, it's like this is something I'm fascinated by, is this idea of, you know, that there's always the death in the bath. And it's an alchemical, you know, pretext to it, is the king and queen go into the alchemical bath to copulate and die. But there's this new angle. I mean, you know, just looking at it from a, I don't know, a more negative or whatever viewpoint, is like we were talking before about, you're watching TV and what are you taking into you? It's the same idea of putting shit in your head. Like, we as Americans got it all backwards, or just a modern, you know, if you want to say this is a modern thing, we're calling our toilet our head, and we're putting shit and piss and all sorts of toxic waste in our head.
Okay, so here's the reason, the significance of Jim Morrison dying in the bathroom stall, and then anyways, and that the bathroom is the head, is that the Lizard King is a reference to the King of Wands, which pictures the lizard by the throne of the king, with a lizard swallowing its tail above the king with the lion, and then you have Tet is the serpent, and then he's also the lion in the strength card, which is Oz, right? So, but...
David, am I wrong? Is that a salamander?
Salamander, yeah.
Yeah,
okay. But it's still a lizard.
No, I know. I just... Because the salamander dying in the fire is in itself indicative of the king kill and the they call the prima materia, the idea of, like, it's again like the splitting of Adam or all that sort of stuff. So I just
right.
that I just want to verify, I was pretty sure it was a salamander, but that makes it all the more resonant.
Totally. And the chapter in Manly P. Hall's The Secret Teachings of All Ages, where he goes into the salamander, is really cool too in that regard. But I was going to say that the King of Wands is actually the highest of all the court cards, being that the Wands is the suit in terms of the four worlds, which is the most etheric. And so it's, you would say it's like the core, the middle brain. It's the core of the brain. And so it's interesting you say the head, you know, that he died in the head. It's also the, you know, it's the pineal. So that's interesting.
But it's also, to me, dying in the head is also the other concept of what the king kill is. And Timothy Leary's Psychedelic Experience, he says the first period is the period of ego loss, right? This is the ego death. This is, so the king is the ego, is the little tyrant in our head. So to say, to die in the head, like, just think of that expression, to die in the head,
mm-hmm.
to be brain dead is one way to go, but it could also be an ego death.
Totally. Here's the other thing that's fucking been tripping me out, and I just had a little thing back and forth with Jason around it, is the lance. So the idea of the pathway from Keter to Tiferet, that is the middle path of the tree, right, is connected to the high priestess and Gimel, right? The Hebrew letter Gimel, which means camel, in Phoenician, when it was more for the rulers and not for the people, the language itself and the meanings of the letters actually meant a lance or a stick, a killing stick, like a spear. And so what does fucking Joker say with, you know, like my faith on the $1 bill? He says, a little song, a little dance, Batman's head on a lance.
Mm-hmm.
A little interesting. Also, Lance is the name of the guy, and we were going into Apocalypse Now. Lance is the one who eats the acid and then sticks the arrow through his head, you know, while they're moving down.
Which is the arrow.
Lance. And then fucking, doesn't he die? Like, don't they see his he gets handed his fucking head in the room, like when he's sitting in there, and then the Godfather comes in and fucking puts the head in his hands, and he's like, ah! It's lame. So, anyway, I don't know. I was tripping out on the fact that it's like that pathway, the lance, and then you have Keter, which is the crown at the top of the lance. So, and then you have Da'at is the false crown that's in between, which is like the head, and we're calling it the head. So you have the head, and then you have the crown, and through the crown, or through the head, is the lance, which meets the crown. Pretty weird.
Hmm. Yeah, but that it seems to make perfect sense. Is that sort of John the Baptist type deal? John the Baptist getting his head cut off, so it's like, you know, off with his head. You know, it's the King of Hearts. The King of Hearts in cards is actually called the Suicide King. That's where I'm taking the name, where the name of this book comes from. Is the Suicide King is the King of Hearts. He's shown on playing cards as the King sticking the sword through his head, which would actually just make him the King of Cups if we wanted to take this to Tarot. But the King of Hearts is the Suicide King. It's this idea of he's actually impaling himself. So John the Baptist, the baptizer, the one who, you know, the bringer of the Holy Spirit, all this sort of stuff, has his head cut off. So to me, it's that same concept. And I just think what was funny when you were saying about the killing stick being the camel. So I was thinking cigarettes, of course.
Yeah. Well, I think that's actually the joke. Because it's Masons, you know, who run these fucking corporations. You look at Morals and Dogma, Albert Pike, it's just loaded with shit like that. Like, you can just see really quickly that Gimel means camel. And if you know how that was manipulated with the people, is originally it was a fucking killing stick. What better name for your fucking cigarette? And then not only that, but you show it as a hieroglyph. So the pack of cigarettes is actually hieroglyphic. It's really apparent.
Now, Doug, you're going to have Frater X on your show next Tuesday, correct?
Yes.
On 42 Minutes?
Yes.
So Frater X, if you can kind of ask him about this, his whole thing is that Albert Pike is not, you know, and Morals and Dogma, all this stuff is not Masonic. His thing is that it's like a, it's almost like the movie Alien. There's a Masonic system in place, the Blue Lodges, the York Rite, and Albert Pike invents the Scottish Rite, but he sort of like grafts it on and eventually uses it to replace, like, slowly take over and replace the old Masonic system. So his argument is that, you know, a lot of what we consider Masonic is actually not Masonic. Anything, you know, Scottish Rite, anything from Albert Pike on is not Masonic.
We are building a religion. We are building it bigger. We are widening the corridors and adding more lanes. We are building a religion, a limited edition. We are now accepting callers for these pendant keychains. You resist it is useless. It is useless to resist it. His cigarette is burning, but he never seems to ash. He is grooming his poodle. He is living comfort eagle. You can meet at his location, but you'd better come with cash. Now his hat is on backwards. He can show you his tattoos. He is in the music business. He is calling you dude. Now today is tomorrow, and tomorrow today. And yesterday is weaving in and out. And the fluffy white lines that the airplane leaves behind are drifting right in front of the waning of the moon. He is handling the money. He's serving the food. He knows about your party. He is calling you dude. Yeah, do you believe in the one big sign? The double wide shine on the boot heels of your prime. Doesn't matter if you're skinny. Doesn't matter if you're fat. You can dress up like a sultan in your onion head hat. We are building a religion. We're making a brand. We're the only ones to turn to when your castles turn to sand. Take a bite of this apple, Mr. Corporate Events. Take a walk through the jungle of cardboard shanties and tents. Some people drink Pepsi, some people drink Coke. The wacky morning DJ says democracy's a joke. He says, now do you believe? in the one big song. He's now accepting callers who would like to sing along. He says, do you believe in the one true edge? By fastening your safety belts and stepping towards the ledge, he is handling the money, he is serving the food. He is now accepting callers, he is calling me, dude! Do you believe in the one big sign? The double wide shine on the boot heels of your prime. There's no need to ask directions if you ever lose your mind. We're behind you, we're behind you. And let us please remind you, we can send a car to find you if you ever lose your way. We are building a religion. We are building it bigger. We are building a religion. A limited edition. We are now accepting callers for these beautiful
Weisenhop. So Weisenhop was the one who was organizing the Illuminati, which infiltrated Masonry, right? But the Masonry that they were infiltrating was, I mean, that was in the, that was in 1776, right? So, I mean, Morals and Dogma wasn't written until much, much later. And at that point, who the hell knows how much it was actually infiltrated.
Correct.
By Weisenhop's group. So,
which
yeah,
means, by the way, his name means wise head, right?
Yeah, right. It's German, right? I mean, that's his actual name. He went by, was it Phoenix? I'd have to look it up. No, that was Crowley's name, secret name. But yeah, I have the book from, you know, Proofs of a Conspiracy, written in the 1700s.
Right.
That book, with, like, that's the one that you can actually find a quote of George Washington acknowledging, where he's like, I'm well aware of the Illuminati, and, you know, I mean, they got in trouble. It was a big thing. That's not speculation. There was a group, the Illuminati, and their records of letters back and forth with Weisenhop talking about their whole doctrine and their ideals actually came out. I mean, you can look at those. But whatever.
But you have, so I mean, you have multiple sort of grafting on or perversions of something, but I guess I just wanted to sort of make the point is that...
Here's something, Alan. So I've been kind of immersed in the Mutants and Mystics thing because we had him on, but he pointed out something that I'd never run across, and I don't know if you guys had, but the manifesto that created the Rosicrucians was like a piece of early science fiction or some other such fiction thing that people latched onto, and then it's Jeffrey Kripal's assertion that oftentimes the core of a religion isn't necessarily literal truth, but then it's made such. So the whole premise of the book is that the fictions that are coming out of different writers' heads end up becoming religions, regardless of how ridiculous they are. It's just so long as everyone agrees that that's the truth.
Yeah, it's the consensus reality. So if enough people believe it, then that's what it is.
But so this German guy, and I'll find the name who came up with Rosie. You know, it was all just fiction. He eventually later said, no, I made all this up. It's not real. There's no secret society. There isn't anything. I made it all up. And then the people who believed it said, well, that's exactly what you're supposed to say.
Right.
It's the life of writing.
Messiah would deny his own.
Right.
Fine. Then I am the Messiah. He admits it. But yeah, I mean, well, look at L. Ron Hubbard, right? That's science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly.
So you guys know about the Zeitgeist Challenge? You hear about that?
What is that?
So with Zeitgeist, right, there's that whole first section where he makes all of these statements, one after the other, about how these are composite characters that are all connected to each other, right? And he gives all this, and he just gives this full download. Well, the place where the people from Zeitgeist got that was from a woman. I actually have the book here somewhere. It's a terrible book, but it's called The Christ Conspiracy. And they just assumed that she had legitimate sources for this information. It turned out that her only real source was Albert Pike. And so basically the people from this website, these people made a website that's basically, we will pay people money if, and it has a list of just a ton of statements that they make in Zeitgeist, if they can back up any of these statements with anything other than Albert Pike. And so, I mean, Albert Pike's argument, obviously, is that the only reason why there's nothing else that says this is because it's a verbal connections that are passed on and that he happens to be privy to it. And so, but like just, that Krishna was on the cross and he had 13 disciples and all this, you know, like there's just all these different statements and, you know, no one's made any money yet.
But this is my point. So we see that Albert Pike has such a huge influence on even modern alternative research, doesn't even realize that they're quoting Albert Pike.
Right.
And obviously these corporations and modern Masonic, whether that, you know, institutions and the both from a conspiratorial angle and just a non-conspiratorial angle, we see how important Albert Pike's infiltration, it had real legs. It's still carried, you know, 200 years later.
Well, it's what a good disinformationist does, is he collects a lot of true information, and then after he does his whole thing, then he steers it in different ways, how he'd prefer it to go. And so Albert Pike is loaded with a lot of real information, but then there's things that are just from him in his own mind and connections that he made, and he just drops it in there, you know? I mean, I don't really mind so much, but it's nice when it's expressed as a possibility.
Exactly,
that he says, here's one way of looking at it, not this is what it is, along with a bunch of other things that are the way things are. So, you know, it's nice to stay factual.
that's my issue with a lot of this stuff, is that, you know, Doug makes the point, if Rosicrucianism extends from science fiction, you know, again, Scientology, that's okay. Like, everything is metaphor, as we were saying earlier in the call. It's impossible to not speak in metaphor, right? Even when we're trying to be literal, we're still only hinting at this ultimate truth, if such a thing exists. So all we're able to do is hint at it. So if everything's metaphor, then that's okay. But as long as you say that it's metaphor, right. I agree with you, David. That's like, ultimately, I have a very open mind. I made a joke before. I don't believe, you know, reptilian, you know, space invaders. I admit that on some level, I suppose I'm open to the possibility. I don't believe that that's the case, and I think it's very highly unlikely, but I'm open to the possibility. The thing is, anything's possible. The only time I have an issue is when someone says, this is how it is. I'm telling you this as fact. Telling you this as fact. There's fucking reptiles on the moon, and they're gonna, you know, they're beaming thoughts into your brain. You tell me that as fact, I'm gonna say fuck you. You want to say that it's a metaphor? Awesome.
Okay. Here's a quote by Terrence McKenna, and it says, "Shall I take the plunge and state that everything specifically human is operated by metaphor? Speaking of ETs, if they have self-reflexive consciousness, they also operate on metaphor. What is, quote, unquote, neither we nor they can know, but we can know what something is like." Then he says, "Hardly, since anything other than pain." So yeah, pain is metaphor. Sex is metaphor. Pleasure is metaphor. Love is a shower of stars in a golden bowl. Hunger is a ravenous beast gnawing our entrails, but pain is just ouch, not a metaphor. That's why we can't really remember pain, only sometimes that we had some.
Wow. Well, I mean, meta just means beyond, right? So metaphor is acknowledging that you have a representation of something. So you have a reflection of something. That's not actually the thing, which is what we know of our perception, that we all of our perceptions are representations of light or whatever you want to call it. That's, you know, I mean, we're attributing all of it. It's all right. Us. So.
Right, yeah. But
going beyond four brings you to the fifth element.
Totally.
Actually, that quote that I just said, that was actually Robert Hunter. And Terrence McKenna replied, "I like what you said about metaphor, and I agree with you, but it reminds me of something that happened to me long ago. It was my early acid days. I had a trip which was all about metaphor, and I reached conclusions similar to those that you expressed." And he said that he told his professor, "Everything is a metaphor." And without a beat, he replied, "What about articles and, or, and of? Are they metaphors?" You see what I'm getting at?
I mean, and isn't but, you know? I mean, and implies this distinction, but it doesn't apply separation or a negation, rather. You know, that's the thing. You can move from one thought to another with and, but with a contrast in between, but with but you end up with a conflict of ideas. So I think that's, you know, I mean, that's the problem with jump to conclusions for it, is you end up with a big but, you know. It's like this or it's this. It's like, no, let's kind of use the crossfader a little bit more if we're going to mix here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to DJ without a crossfader.
But Robert Hunter said before that, he said, "From this, it seems reasonable to extrapolate that looking for the real is looking for pain. There are those who make a practice of this, perhaps believing implicitly that the real is somehow senior to metaphor. This is the worst sort of dualistic thinking. A culture that has a problem with rampant unreality is likely to be a culture that embraces pain and its anodynes."
Right, but the culture that embraces pleasure above all else is embracing pain just the same.
How so? Just as a sort of animal?
Well, because two sides of the same thing, and that comes out at some point in your life. You know, if your whole life is just spent seeking pleasure with no willingness to, endure the hardships, then at some point, you know, you're going to have your heart weighed against a feather like everybody else, you know, and it all breaks down. And so that can be a more of a traumatic process if that's been... If you've had an aversion to that acknowledgement that we're dealing with two sides of the same thing, you know, the fucking ice cream cone, you know, it's like, where are you going to get with this? You know,
yeah.
I mean, if you keep it in perspective, it's fine, you know, but if it's looking at it like it's the end all be all of fucking everything, you're going to be in for kind of a traumatic experience at some point.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not saying that I agree with what he's saying there. I just think it's an interesting little study on metaphor.
I think both are true. It's not to agree or disagree. It's the idea that so when he says, you know, those that are seeking that can't understand unreality are in for a world of pain, and those I would argue that those who are embracing purely pleasure and escapism are in for a world of pain. So it's like, you know, understanding that both are true, that you understand the role of unreality, understand the role of reality, understand that they're two sides of the same thing, but also understand that even though they're two sides of the same thing, you have to keep those two things balanced.
Totally.
Okay. All
right.
Now that makes sense. Where was I going to go with this? I hate that. I always get, I get like, that's another thing. Whatever. Don't listen to me.
You know, it's generally like, it used to be even more so, I think, but it's still true today, that if you want to produce a product, like if you wanted to make a book, you have to have a thesis, a working thesis, and generally everything has to come down to something. So in the final chapters or the final chapter, you kind of have to have this like thing that everything implies or what it comes down to. And that, like, I've seen that like with different philosophers, and then whatever it comes down to is what they present as what that person was expressing, which seems kind of straightforward, but it seems also that that kind of gets in the way of the endeavor, because it's just, it puts a block on it. It's like Descartes, I think, therefore I am. It's like, no, he has this whole meditation to get to that point, but in order to produce the product, people wouldn't have gone for it unless if it came down.
Yes.
Why fucking thing that doesn't come down to anything, you know?
Yeah, but I suck at that. I'm really terrible at getting that sort of solid, like, concrete sort of thing, because I don't really think that way. I know, that's what I'm saying. Which is why I like this kind of stuff, because it doesn't really have to, like, conclude on anything. You know what I mean? It just kind of, it's just a flow of information. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, totally. What seems to be happening with a lot of this stuff is when we follow these chains, is it ends up articulating and communicating ideas that it facilitates it, or it gives it a medium to get it across. It's like symbolic language, you know. It's like hieroglyphs.
Yeah, and it always seems to come around full circle, doesn't it? Yeah. It seems like we go on this long thread, and it actually ends up being part of this whole like thing. But we can't really describe the whole. We're just kind of going through it. You know what I mean?
Circumambulation. I mean, the circling around it and finding that everything comes full circle, to me, if there is a point to come down to, it's that seems to be the nature of things. So to have one solid opinion or fact or whatever will eventually be destroyed, and it will come full circle to something else. So I guess my point is, like, that's the only thing I'm willing to say for certain. and even that is, like, you know, it's like when you go to the idea, like, that Valis loop that Marco Clare, like, oh, everything, or like Jason, you know, it's a never-ending story. Oh, it's you know, everything's just constant metaphor, and it's just a repeating cycles of archetypes and blah blah blah. Is there a way to break out of that? Is there, you know, all these things that still remains open to be seen. But as far as where we are right now, I mean, it seems like, or the only thing I'm willing to say is that nothing's permanent, and you know, it'll constantly shifting. And if you're not staying fluid in yourself, you know, I do believe, again, this is sort of tricky nuance, but I think there's a core truth of who you are and something like that. There are some core things that you hold on to, but I think, you know, whatever, that's your essence, perhaps. But I think ultimately you yourself need to stay fluid, and that's the way to handle a lot of these things. So I agree. That's why I like these types of conversations. It's like, even if we might have a few, you know, all of us have a few opinions, but we're not trying to convince each other of anything. You're not trying to, like, end the debate by saying,
right,
you said that, you know, the never-ending story is about, you know, a conspiracy to make you have gay sex with a moon child. You know, and that's it. And if you don't believe that, you're just brainwashed sheeple.
That is what the never ending story is about. It is.
It seems like most people talking is her, you know, debate. You know what I mean? It's all just coercion. You know what I mean? It's like stopping someone else's wheel just so you can. It's like you've stopped. You can't stop the wheel, so you try and stop it for everyone else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of just getting off the wheel, which I guess would just be that sort of back and forth, trying to prove other people are wrong. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
I really do enjoy these conversations because it's not that. It's just being playful and just, you know, so it's an ability to be playful with each other and also just learn from each other but not to try and stop anybody else's wheel.
Now, see, I disagree.
Motherfucker.
Will you maintain my money? You may turn off my microphone, but you can't steal what you can't feel. Can't stop the sun from shining. Just like me, who won't give in, who rise again, can't stop the world from turning, turning round and round and round. Stop a man.